Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Let's Talk Archetypes with your host, renowned intuitive and author, Roy Solberg.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Archetypes. We're going to have a great show today. Today, we're going to talk about the teacher-mentor archetype. This is an archetypal pattern that's an important one because we're constantly teaching and mentoring ourselves. And in order to be authentic and present who you are to the world, you have to be able to acknowledge your own creativity and potential success and greatness. The teacher mentor gives you the opportunity to explore how you learn, how you express your power into the world, and how you share it with others. So you want to ask yourself, how often do you deny your own creativity? How do you learn from, restriction or expansiveness? How do you talk to yourself? And what teachers have helped you? Most importantly, how do you mentor yourself? So what do you say to yourself? Do you say good for you, or are you constantly putting yourself down? I recently read that the words parents say to their children becomes the child's inner dialogue, and I think this is so true. I also think it applies to your teachers that you've had as well. And this week, I want you to learn to listen to that inner dialogue. Are you praising yourself enough, or are you telling yourself you're not good enough? So remember, two sides, every archetype, illuminated and shadow. So very quickly, the illuminated teacher presents knowledge in a safe form, inspiring students to expand their knowledge beyond what they're taught, and then they know how to share it with others. Where the shadow teacher destroys that natural curiosity, wants you to believe that it's a teacher's way, and that is the only way, that's the right way to do things. So it cuts down on your basic curiosity. The illuminated mentor brings out the best in you and supports you in achieving the highest level of your potential. The shadow mentor instills fear through a support process that is guaranteed that the potential for greatness is denied. Now, I think the best teachers teach from the heart, not from the book. And my guest today is one of those teachers. Judy Bridges is one of the few people who can tell you to sit down and shut up and write and make you smile while you're doing it. She is the author of the award-winning book, Shut Up and Write, and it's a great book. And what we're going to talk about today applies to you, whether you are writing, whether you are doing art, whether you are doing mathematics. It's still the same archetypal pattern. But back to Judy. She's a renowned mentor and coach. She's earned her living as a writer before founding Redbird Studio Center in Milwaukee. And this woman has taught and mentored over 6,000 aspiring and accomplished writers of all ages. Now, in my book, it's probably more than that, much more than that. So today she's going to share her wisdom with us. She's currently working on her new book, and if we have time, we'll ask her about it. It's a collection of family stories titled You Drive, You're Too Drunk to Sing. So, Judy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roy. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I am just absolutely honored to have you on today. I could not have gotten the Spirit of Archetypes book project finished without you. You were the one that gave me the courage to keep going on it, and especially when I got real whiny. I'm sure you remember that.
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
Oh, gosh.
But it's a good thing you did keep it going, because I think the world would be a whole lot shorter of things if you had not had stopped it anyway along the way there.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. As well as Shut Up and Write. I'm very impressed with that book. So let's talk about the teacher archetype. And what is it that you do that helps people achieve the success that they've achieved through you?
I think probably one of the principal things I do is help people fill gaps. It's probably like that old movie I forgot the name of right now, but anyway, where the guy fills the gaps. You know, all of us do some things very well, and we don't do other things very well. And when somebody comes to me and they want to write something, you know, sometimes they've got terrific ideas, but when they start writing them, they might not be able to handle such a thing as a craft thing like point of view, or, you know, handling a voice and getting their own voice in it, and they don't have the courage maybe to do that. They might be writing a play, but they haven't really heard anybody read that back to them, and I can get a group of people together and say, okay, you read that part, you read that part, you read that part, and then the person who wants to do the writing can hear literally what's going on with kind of a staged operation. So that filling that gap, taking a look and listening to people and seeing where they want to go, first, I think the most important thing to me is finding out what they want. And once I find out what they want and kind of start ferreting out a little bit what they've got that does work for them, what we can build on, and then what gaps that have to be filled, and that takes them a whole long way. It's a good thing.
And, you know, this works regardless of whether you're writing a book, a play, or, as I said, doing mathematics or whatever in the world. It fits absolutely every desire that a person wants to do. One of the things I do with my clients is say, what do you want?
Uh-huh.
And defining what they want is often quite a challenge for them. And I would imagine it's even more when someone is writing and has an idea, but no idea where they want to go with it.
Yeah, I think that enters in the whole question you mentioned a little earlier, the thought about creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that everybody is creative.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be either nurtured or it can be beat out of them. And it doesn't take too much to beat it out of them. It can just be one event. There was one woman that I worked with who was, she was about almost a little over 80 when I first met her, actually. When she was in third grade, her name was Alice, and when Alice was in third grade, she was raised in an orphanage, but in school she wrote a little story. And the kids swiped the story from her and read it out loud and laughed at her. And Alice never wrote again until she was in her 80s.
Wow.
And the first time that I encountered her and asked her, would you read that poem to me? Mm-hmm. She read it in such a way that I could not hear anything at all that she said because her face was glued to the paper. She just had her head down and was like, okay, Alice, what was that, you know? Well, within a couple of years, it took just about 2 years of encouragement and strength, really. She stood up in front of a room full of 250 people and read that same poem that she had read to me that day, polished. She had worked it, you know, brought down the house. She was absolutely wonderful. I was emceeing the program, and when she finished reading, she turned around and she came back and she came past me and she said, "This is the best day of my life."
Oh.
And the second thing she said right after that, though, was, "Please don't tell my son I said that." But we put together a book of the things that she wrote just in those few years.
Oh, my goodness.
And she sold every copy. It was a very casual, you know, handmade paper kind of book and so forth. But she sold every copy that was made of it. And she died when she was 87. And I was so privileged to read that poem at her memorial service. It was just really a very touching thing for me to be able to do that. But when you look at that, that creativity was quieted out of shame for that many years, but she still had the courage to bring it out. It took some help with, you know, some nurturing on the side. I certainly wasn't the only one in the whole world that was cheering her on and encouraging her and guiding a little bit, too, because it's not just always a walk in the park to do that. But she did it, and how cool was that for her, you know?
And there are so many things in our lives that we have gotten closed down or you know, something has happened that closed us down. And it's a matter of being able to acknowledge that and let it come back up, give it life again.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it limits your life a great deal.
Well,
it's
I think it does.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think we have always valued, or we think of creativity in just areas like artistic areas, when in fact, mm-hmm. just as you mentioned before, what is not creative? I mean, you know, it takes a whole lot of creativity to build a building or be a doctor or to make a sale. And I think, frankly, the most creative people in the entire universe are moms who, if they can put together a dinner that's like liver and get five kids to eat it, and it shows up on a table at a time. I mean, this is called creativity, you know. Just this morning, I was out in the backyard, and I was cleaning up my grandmother's hand-crocheted rug. And I was thinking about it because we were talking about doing this show. I was thinking about it while I was doing it. I said, if this thing was hanging in a gallery right now, somebody would be looking at it and say, look at those colors, the purples, the deep greens, what selections she made, the great artistry of putting it together. And all my grandmother thought she was doing was sticking something on the floor, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
It's in every field and it's in every way, and if we can recognize it too in some of the ways that we do it, that kind of expands to the other things that we want to do in our lives. We can honor that creativity and help it to grow and enjoy what's there of it.
So let's an example of someone who has their creativity blocked. If they walk into into any of your workshops, and you have a multitude of, you have the Shut Up and Write, you have, what is the one at the Clearing called?
There's two that I do at the Clearing. One is a Writer's Wellspring, and then another one is a Women's Writing Retreat. The one is more for beginning to intermediate, and the other is for intermediate and beyond. So I do two,
so
and they're week-long ones. Those are great.
Oh, they're wonderful.
Yeah, such
an
actor doing things, too.
Yeah. So if someone walks in and their creativity is so blocked and they feel like they can't put two words together, how do you begin to draw them out? How do you begin to nurture them?
Probably the first thing I do is say, talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And while they are doing that, you're looking for the thing that lights them up. And we all have stuff that we really care about. And once you can kind of hook into that, that I can, then I've got something that we can draw on to make more out of. And it may be that we make a story out of it. Since writing has to be my business, it may be that we make a story out of it. It may be that I mentioned plays before, monologues. There's many different kinds of things that can be done, but then finding a structure that works for them. Some people are really, really good at writing dialogue. They don't know who they are until they write something. And they can get them to not be afraid. One of the first things that we do, the first time that anybody's going to share things within a workshop, first I have them do a trial write, and I know their hearts are beating the whole time. I don't want to do this. Everybody's afraid. So my first question to them is, okay, who wrote the worst one? And then the worst one can read first. You know,
exactly.
Because indeed, it never really is the worst. And before, by the time everybody gets through reading it, there's freedom in it being. I like to say that I'm looking for bad writing, and I actually am, because that leaves people free to just plain write and get out of their own way. And by the time they read, and then we go around the whole room. However many people are in there, I usually have a pretty limited size group anyway, but we go around the whole room and people will read their fast. These are fast scribble writes. They are not expected to be good. They're not expected to be perfect at all. And they'll go around and read them, and then I go back around the room again and I say, okay, what do you remember of so-and-so's piece? What do you remember it? And people will remember something out of every one of those, everyone who wrote. Something that they wrote will be memorable to everyone in that room. That is really powerful stuff to know about your own work.
Yes, yes.
There's a whole lot of
space
for growing in there. And that room to do it badly, the room to make mistakes with it, I don't know what can be more important in all areas of creativity than having the freedom to make mistakes.
Yes,
So often in our lives, there's there's the scold, you know, there's the, uh-oh, you can't do that, right? You can't do that. You can't
absolutely.
Do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. You got to do that. You got to do that. There's so many rules. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that anybody can write sometimes.
Yeah.
But
well, that also works in my experience. My mother was an incredibly wonderful seamstress, and everything had to be perfect. So when I began quilting, I gave myself permission to do it badly. And that was the one thing that kept me quilting. And you know, people rave about my quilts. But still, I had to go through that process of giving myself permission. And once you do, it's like, well, okay, just, and it works the same way, like you said, in writing.
Uh-huh.
If someone is beginning, you know, feeling that lack, that little voice that says, you know, I want to do more, how would they go about sort of ferreting out their own creativity? Maybe make a list of...
Pardon me?
I was going to say maybe kind of look at what they're good at, like you were saying, what their story is.
I think so. I think probably... Well, one of the things a person, if it's in writing, there are, you know, tools for ferreting things out a little bit. But speaking more generally about the whole business of, and I'll take it to an artistry point of view, there's a woman by the name of Julia Cameron that many of your people will be familiar with, wrote a book called The Artist Way that has been used by artists and writers and engineers and doctors it's a splendid book on freeing up your brain and finding your way. I would
absolutely
add to that a few other things, or whether or not a person read that book, to leave themselves some room to daydream. We don't have very much quiet time in our lives, and to shut the world down for a little while and do some daydreams and make some of that daydream be, what would you like things to be like for you? And these are all tools that you use yourselves, but if in many of your venues, I know. But if part of that vision turns out to be that you're standing there signing a book contract at some point, well, one of the things you know is you want to write a book. If one of the things in your vision is that you're standing there reading poetry, well, then, well, you know what? Let's write poetry, you know?
Yeah.
And if you're looking at your, if you go and look at your own bookshelf, and what you see is all historical novels, that's a pretty good clue of what you might be wanting to do. So I think it does take some other things, though. Finding venues to get some approval, that would help. You know, finding the right kind of workshops, and that means bailing out of the ones that are not approving for you, and that doesn't mean, I don't mean being sappy. We're like, oh, everything you do is wonderful. That won't work very well. You have to have some patience with yourself and leave yourself some freedom to make the mistakes and that, but then there is another balancing factor in there, I believe, and that is work. I think it's too easy to think that creativity and all this can come from just sitting there thinking about it.
I wish.
Yeah, don't you? Really? What a grand idea that would be.
Yeah.
And I think
wish.
That's supported with some of the myths of you know, the great thinkers who took a walk in the park, and while they were walking in the park was when it really happened. Yeah, but it only happened then because they'd been working on it for, you know, 7 months or something like that.
Exactly.
So the work and the discipline, you can't publish what you don't write. You can't show it in an art show, and you can't walk into it in a building, and you can't use it as a tool. So you still have to put the work in there. But getting that vision, I think, is a if there's time to tell you a story.
Yes, go ahead. Oh, look, before we do that, I wanted to tell the listeners, if you want to call in, you can call 1-877-296-0345, and we'll be able to answer any questions that you might have. So now the story.
Well, I didn't start teaching until I was, actually until I was 50. By that time, I had been earning my living at writing for quite a while. And a friend said, let's do this, and I did it and thought it was a silly idea and got really hooked into the whole business of teaching. And only then did I realize that I came out of a family full of teachers. Because no one in my family, I was the first one to get a college degree, no one in my family had that kind of a background or anything like that. But when I thought about what they did, it was really remarkable. Example, my dad, no education, but I remember being about 4 years old when he was building his first factory. He was manufacturing electrical parts. And he stood with me. I was the only kid at that point. And he stood with me in this warehouse, gray, misty, dirty, smelly, straw on the floor, big, huge room, and said, the furnace is going to be over there. There's going to be a row of people over there working on drill presses. I don't think I knew what a drill press was, but I got his idea anyway.
Yeah.
You know? And there would be this here, and the offices would be over there. This is in a blank room. There's a rustling up on the top over in a loft over there. And I'm drawing my attention to that, and he said, there was a bum living up in the loft. And he said, I don't know what I'm going to do with the guy. Hey, like hell, let's throw him out of there, you know. And he was really, you know, he was so much in the moment. Fast forward a couple of years, I got to see that place with the furnace over there, with the drill presses running over there, with the office over there. Think of what that does with a kid. With anybody. It doesn't have to be a kid. But you're drawing out the vision, exactly the kind of thing that you talk about so often, and looking forward and making a vision of where you want to go and where you want to be. But you're taking this, you're taking the leap. You're allowing a whole lot of room for mistake. You can really fall on your butt doing something like that. But you're making it. You make it happen. You telescope it, and you start making it happen. But it never would happen without that vision. It never would happen without the patience.
Exactly.
It would never happen without the courage that comes from some sort of approval from somewhere, not always external, often your own self that you're getting it. That, I think, is terrific teaching.
What I would add to that is self-trust. This is where the teacher-mentor archetype comes in being able to create, but also being able to mentor yourself and saying, yes, I can. There's a great children's show, Dora the Explorer, and when they accomplish something, they run around singing, I did it, I did it. And it's great, and we need to do the same thing as individuals, as adults, is to go around and say, I did this, and I am proud of it, and I have created my life and my spiritual life in such a way that it supports my authenticity. I want to make a comment about the book, Julia Cameron's The Artist Way. Mm-hmm. I recommend that to most all of my clients, and I really liked the first one that she did.
Mm-hmm.
I emphasize that, and it's a great way to rediscover who you are, look at some of the things that have happened to you in the past, and overcome them. And one of the things you have to do is take yourself on an artist outing once a week.
Yes.
And this is what you were just talking about, is finding what I like, what I don't like, what I enjoy, discovering new things about yourself. I mean, it's just a wonderful experience. So,
and
so I love it.
It's allowing somebody, allowing yourself to enjoy yourself, too, to indulge in things. I think, you know, depending on what our background was, often we have a feeling of limitations, like we're not supposed to have all that fun. We're supposed to be working all the time. And we're not supposed to do things wrong. Well, that means we can't take any risk with anything either. And all of those not supposed to's, and then you have to be humble besides. I mean, really. Who needs some of that?
Yes, get rid of that humbleness.
Yeah. I was walking past a bookstore one day, and I saw a sign on this thing that was for a book that was titled How to Be Humble. And I thought, yeah, who needs that? You know? if anything, most of us have too much of that.
Exactly.
Even when it seems like we're big blowhards or what have you. Actually, I want to address that something. When we're talking about teachers and finding people and mentors to work with and so forth, that I would say is a type to watch out for. When I was hiring people at the studio to teach workshops, the three things that I watched for with them is, one, that they had some experience in the area that they were teaching. They didn't have to be, you know, stars and have won a Pulitzer doing it, but I wanted some experience with that. Another, that they'd be easy to get along with, because after all, we've all had enough of the other. But the third and most important one was that they had an attitude of helping people learn. That is, as opposed to imparting their great wisdom. I don't think I don't think we learn so much from somebody pontificating. You might learn, the rules, but they don't help you grow within it. But somebody who wants to help somebody learn. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I prefer suggestions rather than being told that I have to do something. You know, you might try it this way, as do you have to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Judy, we have run completely out of time. I think we have about 4 minutes left. I want to give your website, which is redbirdstudio.com.
Yes.
Shut Up and Write is available. Libraries,
everywhere.
Bookstores, where else?
Libraries, bookstores, Amazon, it's on Kindle and it's on Nook at Barnes & Noble. And
yep.
It will soon be on iPads.
Perfect.
So there's plenty of sources.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today, and promise me you'll come back.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoy it, Roy. Bye-bye.
Perfect. Goodbye. So the teacher is one who is indeed wise, but does not bid you to enter the house of his wisdom, but rather lead you to the threshold of your mind. Khalil Gibran said that. Next week, we are going to do a tutorial. I am going to do a tutorial, and hopefully you'll join me. It's on intuition. What is it? Who's got it? And how to develop yours. Intuition is the cornerstone of living an authentic life. So tune in next Wednesday, and we'll explore how you can recognize and trust yours. The Spirit of Archetypes book and card set is available through my website, roysolberg.com. Remember, that's ROI as in ice. You're welcome to order and pay through PayPal. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being with me. Take care, everyone, and join me next week, and let's talk archetypes.